The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
What is up, Valley boys and Valley girls? It is a great Wednesday here in the state of Arizona. Just 110. Nothing too bad to deal with today on this very busy sports Wednesday. I'm Jordan Hamm, filling in for Brad Sessmatt on the Brad Sessmatt Show. It's going to be a bit of a potluck, a smorgasbord on the Brad Sessmatt Show today. Brad and I were talking earlier this week. He wanted me to unload or, you know, empty out the recruiting notebook. So been talking to a lot of guys around the state, talking to a lot of guys that have made commitments, on the verge of making commitments. So just going to give you some news and notes on some of the guys that's you know, going to be making decisions shortly. It's a busy time of year in recruiting. A lot of these elite guys want to wrap up their commitments before their senior year so they can just focus on the season, you know, try to make a push for a state championship. And some guys are going to be extending things out. But it's always a busy time of year, these last couple of weeks before the season. Guys are trying to get, you know, put a bow on their recruitment and then just focus on the season. So a lot of news on that front. Devin Henry, our Mr. Swiss Army Knife of Sports 360. He does a little bit of everything. He's also going to come in, do some racing talk. I know that he is interviewing a local racer who, just got his license, or is of age to get his license. So a pretty crazy story with that. So we're going to get into that as well. But real quick, we'll just go through the rundown brought to you by Sagicor Now. Sagicor Now, protect what matters most. And I greeted you as Valley Boys and Valley Girls. And that means that Kelly Oubre is back. And this isn't really news. It was about a week ago that we heard the deal was going to be happening, but they put pen to paper finally, and the small forward is back with the Phoenix Suns. And I instantly thought back to a December night. I was in Las Vegas getting ready to cover ASU's bowl game at the Las Vegas Bowl against Fresno State with my girlfriend and fellow reporter, Sarah Cazell. We were in the car with Ralph Amsden, good buddy of Sports 360 AZ, and his lovely wife. We were going to go out to dinner. And on Twitter, everything was popping up about this failed trade that the Suns were trying to pull off. And it was, you know, there was confusion over, you know, which team would be getting what with Dylan Brooks and Marshawn Brooks. And Kelly Oubre was involved, but he wasn't going to be coming to the Suns. And that deal completely disintegrated. And we were sitting there in Vegas going, what the hell is going on? Like, only with the Suns would this happen. But it was actually really good luck that that happened, because the deal fell through. They just did a straight-up deal with the Wizards. Trevor Ariza went there. Kelly Oubre came back. And they had a pretty quality small forward the rest of the way for the year. Small sample size, but they were able to sign him to a two-year deal. And a lot of people were saying, well, I'm wishing it was more long-term. And I think 2 years is fine. It's a good testing ground. There's not an urgency of a one-year deal, but it's a good testing ground to see if this small sample size for Kelly Oubre is the regular. Now that he has an opportunity, is this the type of play that Suns fans can anticipate moving forward? Or is it just kind of a flash in the pan? You know, the Suns were already out of reach of any, you know, postseason or anything like that. So it was just Oubre, you know, going off. And on the on Kelly Oubre's end, it's you get 2 years to see if this organization is trending in the right direction. And I feel like they're starting to. We'll see how they do this year with an actual point guard and some guys that can play some defense. But I feel like it was a good compromise between the two, rather than do the long extension where, you know, if Kelly Oubre doesn't pan out, you don't want to be paying him for 4 years. And for Oubre, I think it's the same deal. If the Suns are still really kind of going nowhere, he can, 2 years from now, he can test the waters and kind of figure it out. So I think that was a good deal all around. Diamondbacks, Alex Young is coming in as the fifth starter, you know, the guy that came up from the minor leagues, and in a time when the rotation really needed him because the depth was completely depleted, and he's done a tremendous job so far, and I believe three starts so far, and that's what's happened with the Diamondbacks really since Torrey Lovello took over, because you remember in his first year, it was Zach Godley was the guy that started the year in the minor leagues, was a spot starter, a long reliever, and then all of a sudden came in, and he was a pretty darn good 4-5 starter. I mean, him and Robbie Ray were kind of tearing it up. They were leading the bigs in swings and misses outside of the zone. They were getting guys to chase. So he was a great, you can even call it a mid-season addition, but early season addition. And then last year, Matt Cook has struggled this year, but last year he did exactly that on a, I think, a much smaller span than what Zach Godley was able to do. But Matt Cook was a very serviceable starter for the Diamondbacks coming up midseason as well, and now Alex Young is doing it. So certainly a welcome sight for the D-backs rotation, because they are hurting. They're pretty thin right now. Have a good top three right now with Greinke, Robbie Ray, and Merrill Kelly. But after that, whether it's due to injury or due to struggles, they needed some help. And Taylor Clark is coming back as well. But Alex Young has come in and just been able to eat some innings, which has been absolutely huge for them. So that's what's going on kind of on the pro landscape. Let's get into the recruiting side of things right now. Like I said, busy time of year. A lot of guys making their commitments. A lot of guys that will in the coming weeks be making their commitments, cutting lists, narrowing it down, really, really focusing in. And I've been over to a couple of various campuses talking to guys. But the news of the day, and the news of the day yesterday, was Lathan Ransom. The Sal Point Catholic safety is a guy, a four-star talent, an All-American, a guy that was at the opening, got to cover him. He dominated at the opening. He looked so good. And in 7-on-7, you never really know with the safety sometimes, because sometimes it's just dip and dunk and that sort of thing. But Lathan made his presence known throughout that week. And he was on the equivalent to the all-star team that 24/7 Sports put together, top performers. He was one of those guys, just a guy that has a reputation for being a big hitter, a bit of a thumper. But over the years, we've seen him develop into so much more than that, so much more than a guy that can just lay a big hit. He can really impact the game on both sides of the ball. But an elite safety, and he had it down to Ohio State, Notre Dame, and Texas. And he made his pledge to Ohio State. He's joining Jack Miller, the quarterback over at Chaparral, as Ohio State commits. And I was able to catch up with him before the commitment. He was nice enough to do an interview with us, kind of breaking down why he chose Ohio State. So we're going to go ahead and play that now. You can hear from the man himself on why he chose the Buckeyes. Recruiting roundup on the road with Lathan Ransom, one of the top defensive backs in the entire country, and he's going to be making his commitment. I think his shirt is a dead giveaway, but Lathan, go ahead and take it away.
Yeah, I'll be taking my talents the next 4 years to the Ohio State Buckeyes.
And why did you choose the Buckeyes?
When I got there, I just really bonded with the players, really felt like a family feel, and then I'm really all in for what Coach Day is going to do these next couple years while he's there, and really excited to see what he brings to the Ohio State defense.
When did you know it was the Buckeyes?
I think like 3 weeks after my visit, I kind of just felt that it was home, and I really Coach Day and Coach Halfley were really just very impressive, so I just couldn't miss out on that chance.
How do you see Ohio State's defense and what they do with the safeties being a good fit for you?
Ohio State's really been known as one of those DBUs for the last couple of years, and they have a great history of producing great defensive backs. So I'm just excited to be a part of that. And then Coach Day's really basing the defense around safeties, and I'm just really excited to be a part of that.
Now you're going to be teaming up with Jack Miller and potentially some other Arizona guys, but I know Jack has been a very vocal recruiter. What were his conversations like with you when he was making the pitch for the Buckeyes?
So the Ohio State recruiting class is very special already. So just to be a part of that, and then just it's one of those special classes that could possibly be competing for a national championship, and that's been my dream, and playing on the big stage has really intrigued me.
Now, got to watch you at the opening, tear it up, have a great performance throughout that entire week, but also you had Jack there. You had multiple Ohio State wide receivers and other defensive backs. Just this group as a whole on the national stage, just how do you think they're going to stack up to other classes throughout the country?
I mean, they're phenomenal. I mean, watching them compete and competing against them was just a great experience. And then just thinking about, I mean, that's how it's going to be at practice for the next 3 to 4 years, competing against each other, getting each other better, and then just pushing each other to their limits.
Ohio State also recruiting your teammate Bijan Robinson. You made it very clear when you in your interviews at the opening that you guys were taking visits separately, and if you were going to play at the next level, that would be great, but it would be just because it was the best situation for both of you.
Yes, sir.
Now that you're a commit, are you going to be making a little bit more of a push for the Buckeyes now that his commitment date is coming up?
I mean, I'm definitely going to give my input and try to get him to look at the Buckeyes and look throughout the whole recruitment thing. But, I mean, it's the best decision for him. I'm not going to try to force him to pick a school. I think just he makes his own decision. And then if he ends up a Buckeye, I mean, it's going to be a blessing. We're going to do some amazing things the next couple of years.
You said that it was a point of pride to be at the opening representing Tucson. All these accomplishments. You always want to make sure that Tucson is well represented. How did this Tucson and South Point community support you throughout this decision?
They supported me the whole time, had my back the whole time, showed me a lot of love, and that's really been one of my biggest goals, especially in my recruitment video and stuff, is to show Tucson a lot of love, show the people that have been here for me since the beginning and not just started to show me love since my recent success. So definitely just show Tucson love.
How are you looking to improve your senior year and beyond?
Be a better captain, be a better teammate, try to be a leader on the field, and then definitely just the stats and stuff, definitely, that they'll come, but I really just want to be a better leader on the football field.
All right, Lathan Ransom, your latest Buckeye commit.
Go Bucks.
I always appreciate when guys are willing to talk to us before they make their commitments public and do those type of interviews. And so really appreciate what Lathan was able to do. And these types of stories are my favorite to do. As a recruiting reporter, you know, you get to talk to a guy who has worked his entire life to get to the next level, and they are able to make that decision, move on, and, you know, you can see a lot of these guys when they walk in the room, and this was the case with Lathan. He was at the opening, he was a very hot commodity for the media, because he was one of the top uncommitted players there. And for guys who were commits of those schools that were also participating. So if you were an Ohio State commit, you were following Lathan around, kind of getting in his ear like, hey, come on over to Columbus. If you were a Notre Dame commit, you were doing the same thing. If you were a Texas commit, you were doing the same thing. I feel like he was getting pulled a lot of different directions. And he handled that very well. And he was very patient and was very graceful in giving and generous in giving his time, and that's just the type of guy that he is. But these are my favorite types of things to do as a recruiting reporter, because they're making that decision. They get to tell their story and share their commitment and go in depth. I think that these are a great opportunity to kind of give a guy, right when he makes that announcement, there's a big flush of information of why he chose that and everything like that. And you know, when we're able to do those types of stories, it does provide that sit down effect of like, hey, let's just go through all of this together. And, you know, what led you to Ohio State or, you know, whatever school it was. So I always appreciate when guys are willing to do that before and trust Sports 360 AZ, trust me with that sort of information that it won't get out or anything like that before it gets public, because that's something we take very seriously over here. So I always appreciate when guys do that, and appreciate Lathan for sitting down with us. So we mentioned it in that interview, but this is interesting now, because Lathan just committed to Ohio State. His teammate, running back Bijan Robinson, the number two player in the state, and just an absolute stud running back, he has a final two out right now, and it's Ohio State and Texas. He's going to be making his commitment public August 2nd. They were very intentional in that when they were visiting schools that were recruiting both of them, they would visit separately. They did that on purpose. They would, you know, when I think it was a 2-week span where Lathan was going to Texas and Bijan went to Ohio State, and then the next week it was flipped or vice versa, whatever it was. But they didn't want to kind of have that groupthink effect of, yeah, let's go do this together, dude. Like, let's go do this. It was, let's find the best decision for both of us. If it happens to be the same place, awesome. But let's make sure it's best for us as individuals, and then we can thrive together as teammates if that is truly the best situation for both of us. So if Ohio State is able to add Bijan as well, then all of a sudden you have Bijan Robinson, Lathan Ransom, Jack Miller. Like, that's a pretty good haul. And when you look at the top player in the state, Keely Ringo, Ohio State's in their top five as well, or in his top five as well. So what Ohio State has been able to do with this recruiting class in Arizona is incredible. We talked a lot last year about what Cal did. They got six commits, all very good players, but they didn't get like three of the top five players in the state. Again, a lot of really good players went to Cal, but like this talent haul that could be going to Ohio State is just incredible. And then that also brings up the discussion of high school teammates moving on to college. I think this would be the best tandem off the top of my head of Lathan Ransom and Bijan Robinson since Craig Rowe and Taylor Luan in 2009. Chaparral both went to Michigan. Craig Rowe went on to set the record for most consecutive starts at Michigan with like 48 or something ridiculous like that. He's in the CFL now. And then Taylor Luan just happens to be the highest paid offensive lineman in the NFL right now, a record-setting contract that he just signed. So that's off the top of my head. I'm going to do some deeper research on that. But 10 years ago, that's what happened, and it could conceivably happen again just with the rivals of Michigan. With Ohio State if these two South Point Lancers end up going there. So coming up next, going to be emptying the recruiting notebook, give you some notes. I was over at Saguaro, talked to a lot of those guys yesterday, been around campuses talking to a lot of guys. Also going to kind of go through some of the top uncommitted guys, just kind of in my gut where, maybe not where they're going to go, but the teams that are certainly in the mix and potentially leading the pack there. So that's coming up next on the Five Star Sit Down and the Brad Sesmat Show. Welcome back to the Five Star Sit Down and the Brad Sesmat Show. We are going to be opening up the recruiting notebook, emptying it out, talking about some of the news and notes that I've come across in the past couple of days, past couple of weeks, on what could be happening here on the recruiting landscape. Like I've said before, it's a very busy time of year. A lot of guys trying to narrow their lists, trying to make a commitment before the season. Some guys decided to kind of push it off and see how some of these teams also do. That was with one case in particular, talking to a guy yesterday. So was at Saguaro yesterday, talked to a lot of guys. But let's start. We've talked a lot of Sal Point. Let's talk a little bit more Sal Point before we get into some of the stuff in the Valley. So we talked about Lathan Ransom, his big commitment to Ohio State. They just got a great ball hawk safety. Bijan Robinson down to Texas and Ohio State. He's going to be making his commitment August 2nd, or making it public, I should say. But there's one other prospect that's a senior for South Point that's just got a crazy story. His name's Bruno Fina, very versatile offensive lineman, played guard last year, will play tackle this year, has played center, has played tight end, like anywhere and everywhere for Dennis Binet, he has played. And 3 months ago, zero Power 5 offers. He had one offer from Abilene Christian, and then USC pulled the trigger on him. And then the next day, UCLA. And then it was just this snowball effect where most of the Pac-12 has now offered him, Vanderbilt, a lot of the Ivy League schools have offered him. He's up to, like, I'd say about 14 offers right now. And he's a guy, very highly academic, 4.0 student, wants to go into marketing and management with a minor in engineering. That just gave me a headache just saying that. So the fact that he's able to balance that and football is pretty darn impressive. But he is getting ready to narrow his list down and really have kind of a couple main schools that he's focusing on. And I think a commitment will be happening shortly. But he's a guy that, again, very versatile, very bright guy. And one thing that a lot of schools really like about him is his upside. And he's a guy, he told me since he entered high school, he's gained 100 pounds. And it's 100 pounds of good weight since he, 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago. So he's really been able to bulk up. He's the son of John Fina, who is a longtime Arizona Wildcat. Played in the NFL with the Bills, so comes from some good genes. And when he was at UCLA, they actually measured various joints and things like that that are a good indicator of, how much more you could grow. And they were like, you're going to be bigger than your dad, who is a former NFL offensive lineman, lineman. So there's a lot of upside to him. He definitely has not peaked, but an intriguing guy that really, I think, has developed into a Power 5 guy, and that's one thing that the South Point coaching staff was telling us last offseason. Like, keep an eye out for this guy. Keep an eye out. You know, some things are starting to come together for him. So he's going to – I feel like a commitment is coming relatively soon, and at least narrowing a list as well. So on the Saguaro front, was over there yesterday. Always appreciate getting to see Coach Mons, and you know, that he always opens the door to Sports 360 AZ, so that's always good getting to catch up with him, his coaching staff, and a lot of his players. Keely Ringo talked to him, and really he kind of said, look, when I'm ready, I'm ready. I'm going to continue to take some visits. He doesn't have many on the books. Georgia is at the end of the month, so that's one to certainly look out for. He didn't really indicate anything to me, but I will say this. I wouldn't necessarily be surprised if maybe he walked away a Georgia commit. I feel like the Bulldogs are in really good standing with him. He has a top five out right now of just a murderer's row of programs: Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, Oregon, and Texas. And I think that Georgia has certainly put themselves very nicely in a position to, you know, potentially get the top player in the state. So he's just a very talented player. And talking to Chris Cartman, he was a guy that was just like, I watch him and I see potentially, you know, a day one NFL draft guy a couple years down the road. So, you know, obviously a uber talented player and has some very, very good programs looking at him. And then I also caught up with Jacoby Covington, another secondary mate of Keely, and they just have a really good secondary this year. Jacoby just went to Washington a couple months ago, and that was very impressive. And just kind of the one thing that was interesting to me, the one thing that jumped out to him was they have a program in place at Washington about you know, getting you set up for life after college and life potentially after football, where it's how to manage your financials and how to make sure all your ducks are in a row. So it's not just like, okay, I'm an uber talented football player, but you know, one injury could knock me out, and then I don't really have the skills that I need to be an adult and, you know, to take care of myself, take care of, you know, my family potentially down the line, that sort of thing. So that was one of the things that really jumped out to him. I think that the Huskies are certainly in good standing with him as well. He said that he is setting up visits right now. It doesn't have dates on them yet, but he will be visiting LSU and Texas A&M. He has used an official at Oklahoma as well. So, again, some really good programs looking at him. Setting commitment date for October 1st. And I asked him the significance of that, if that was, you know, some guys like Lathan, he committed on his birthday yesterday. Some guys like using it as a special day to kind of further honor, you know, a relative or, you know, whatever it may be. And he was just like, that just feels like a good timeline. It'll be by then all of his visits will be done. There wasn't really a significance to October 1st, just like middle of the season, the visits will be done. I feel like I'll be ready by then to make my decision. Again, put out a top eight a couple months ago, and a lot of really good programs. But like I said, I think Washington has done a very nice job with him. And if you look on his social media, he tweets them out a lot. We'll see how that changes as he takes more and more visits and checks out more and more programs. Israel Benjamin, the running back, I think he's a guy that will be cutting things down here relatively soon as well. The Ivy League really looking at him hard. BYU has offered as well. So just a really dynamic guy, and another guy that, like Bruno Fina, his aspirations isn't necessarily the NFL. That'd be cool. He wants to be in the NFL, but as a general manager. So those are the type of goals that he's going after. So he's obviously looking at some big business schools and kind of academically what could help set him up for that sort of thing, obviously, in addition to a good football program. Matt Polk, the wide receiver over at Saguaro, just having a great spring. And I think he's just going to be a monster. He's a guy, I feel like he has been under-recruited. Just a big-bodied guy, 6'4", 210. You know, his older brother is Nate Polk, who just a year ago committed to Air Force, a very talented family. Football-wise, they have quite a few. You know, he's had a couple brothers play football. His dad played at Oklahoma State. The Cowboys are certainly in it with that. ASU recently offered. I was at a 7-on-7, you know, talking to a couple various guys and going, just watching Matt just dominate and be like, why hasn't ASU pulled the trigger on him? And then just every time there was a break in the action, there'd be another coach that would come up and talk to him or, you know, that sort of thing. And later that day, an offer came through, and they've been recruiting him hard. He has an interest in potentially playing in front of the hometown crowd, but the likes of Oklahoma State, Cal, he just visited Cal. He could pair up with Tommy Christakos, the wide receiver over at Chaparral. So a couple of technically rivals, wide receivers pairing up, but they'd be like the Twin Towers. And I asked Matt about potentially what him and Tommy could do to defenses over the coming years, and he said just dominate them. So that could be a scary sight for the Pac-12 if he were to go ahead and do that. Jalen Jeffers been taking quite a few visits. He released a top 8 a couple months ago, right after that USC offered. So we're going to call it a top 9 because he said yes, USC is in there. Wasn't considering them because they hadn't offered yet, but once they offered, he's considering them. A lot of options, especially around the Pac-12. One thing of note, though, he is very close with Cade Bennett. Cade Bennett, Notre Dame prep, a guy who committed to Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State is recruiting Jalen pretty hard right now. So that could be something where, you know, he's very interested in potentially playing with Cade at the next level. But a lot of good options. Colorado has been looking at him pretty hard. He feels like he was going to get something done before the season, but he wants to look at a couple of these teams in season, see how they do, and that sort of thing. Just get a little bit more information on them. And then finally, Tyler Beverett, quarterback over at Saguaro. He made a commitment to Bucknell just a couple of days ago. And this is a guy who had Power 5 offers. An impressive season last year. He had a couple games where he was injured. It was like two or three games. But he didn't throw an interception against an Arizona opponent. And he didn't throw an interception after September 1st. So really impressive year. A dual threat guy. He committed to Bucknell and Patriot League. Very good academic school, he had the opportunity to potentially play, if not right away, very early in his career. So I was able to talk to him about why Bucknell and why now, why make this decision right now. Why Bucknell?
You know, when I took a bunch of visits to the East Coast, Columbia, Princeton, Lehigh, Bucknell, and Holy Cross, and, you know, of all the schools, I thought Bucknell was the best fit. You know, the coaching staff, you know, they loved me the most. I love the town, Lewisburg. It's kind of a smaller town. You know, people know everybody, and their offense is very similar to Saguaro's. You know, with the RPO type stuff, and obviously academics. You know, they got one of the best business schools in the country, and that was really a big part. So,
you'd want to pursue once football's over a career in business, or what? Yeah. What specifically would you want to do with that?
I'm not 100% sure. You know, business is just it's kind of a broad major and. I just think that would be the best option for me, and, you know, I'll figure it out along the way.
I saw when you committed, one of the other things was the ability to potentially play right away.
Yeah.
How did that factor into the decision?
I mean, obviously, you know, I want to play football, so, I mean, going to that school, they said, you know, three or four years starting, I'll be competing for a job right away, and, you know, I believe I can compete pretty well, so.
How did Saguaro get you ready for college football?
You know, I mean, Saguaro's run at like a college program. You know, we've got strict schedules, and, you know, we lift 4 times a week, and you know, we had a great coaching staff. You know, one of the best coaching staffs in the country, I believe. And you know, Max did a great job preparing me as well. You know, confidence wise, leadership wise, and he did a great job. And Coach Mons, obviously, Coach Weiss, my quarterback coach, and so all those guys really helped me out a lot.
So a few more notes, and congratulations to Tyler on making that commitment. again, anytime a guy can go to the next level, get their education paid for in a place like Bucknell that has a very good academics, he's setting himself up nicely. So congratulations to him. A couple more notes on some other non-Saguaro players that I've been keeping an eye on and that sort of thing. Brendan Rice had a very interesting recruitment so far. Has had offers, certainly, but saw an explosion right after track season where he was able to kind of show off his speed at the state championship. And he's a big-bodied guy, but some of the schools, their knock on him was that he was big but not necessarily fast, and he was able to show that speed. So Mike Zadebski got on the old phone and called some of the Big Ten schools that he knew. He's a guy with heavy Michigan ties, the state of Michigan. And all of a sudden, Michigan State offered. Ole Miss came through. USC offered. He saw an influx of offers, and he had a whole timeline set up. And all of a sudden, that's gotten pushed back a little bit because so many of these new offers come in. Every time I look on social media, every time I see a photo of him, he's wearing a Michigan hat. I don't know if that means anything. I don't know if he just likes the hat. I don't know if he just doesn't want to get sunburned. It's Michigan a lot, and he posts a lot about it. I know that he has posted about the interest of teaming up with J.D. Johnson, the Pinnacle quarterback who is committed to Michigan. Reagan Terry, I love where Arizona's at right now with recruiting, because it's not just Maricopa County right now getting recruited. It's Tucson. We talked, the bulk of our first segment was about Tucson. And Reagan Terry is out at Florence and has over a dozen offers from some big programs, Boston College, Arizona State, Boise State, Cal, Fresno, Kansas State, Nebraska, Oregon State, San Diego State. These are some big time schools. Was able to catch up with him. He had a big week of visits a couple weeks ago. You can check out the story on Sports 360 AZ from a few weeks ago. But he was going to the likes of Iowa State, Nebraska. He checked out Cal. Kind of went all over, predominantly the Midwest. Went to Boston College for a few days. His dad is on the staff up there. But a super talented defensive end that I was able to see at ASU's big man competitions, and ASU, there were multiple coaches keeping a close eye on him. So he's a guy to watch. I know Florence is a bit out there, but during the season, if you have a chance to go see him, check out the schedule. I know the Odyssey Institute, they're playing there. That's a little bit closer on the west side, but you could check him out playing. And same goes for South Point. They're going to be up playing Desert Edge. That's going to be a great game. Desert Edge has a lot of recruits, maybe not necessarily 2020, but 2021, 2022. It's going to be guys at the top of the rankings. So if you want to check out South Point or, Florence, and you don't want to make a huge drive, check out their schedules, because you want to see some of these top flight guys at the high school level, because it's just fun to watch and really watch them dominate, honestly. Last note, Andrew Rumery, Valley Vista offensive lineman. It's a strong offensive line year. We've seen a lot of guys come through, make their commitments. Andrew Millick a couple weeks ago made his commitment to USC. Tosh Baker, Notre Dame. Cade Bennett, Oklahoma State. I feel like Rumery could see some more momentum with his recruitment, but I know he really likes U of A. U of A got on him early. He's really been able to change his body, kind of slim down a little bit, and uber flexible. So U of A fans, certainly keep an eye out on him. So that's the notebook has been emptied. The news and notes are out there. Make sure to keep it to sports360az.com for more of my thoughts, more of my, the interactions I have with these guys. Again, busy time of year. A lot's going to be happening over the next couple of weeks. Coming up next, we have Devin Henry talking to one of the local racers who is a teenager and dominating on the track. That's coming up next on the Brad Sussmat Show.
So on November 8th, 9th, and 10th, a lot of people are going to be watching NASCAR's semifinal race at ISM Raceway. What drivers are going to be those final four drivers racing for a championship at Homestead Miami Speedway the following week? But guys, there's going to be a champion crowned at ISM Raceway on November 9th in the K&M Pro Series for the West Division. This is the Inside Lane. I'm Devin Henry, and to get us ready and to kind of set up the second half of this K&N season, we are bringing on a third-generation driver. He's a 2018 Kern County Raceway Park Track Champion, a rookie in the K&N Pro Series West. He's the driver of the XYO number 6 Sunrise Ford Racing Ford Fusion from Scottsdale, Arizona. It's Jagger Jones. Jagger, thanks for joining me, man.
No problem. Thanks for having me on the show.
Hey, it's great to have you on. Like I mentioned, a Scottsdale resident. You're not a native of Arizona, but you've grown up here in the desert. We just had our first ever NASCAR Cup Series winner come from Arizona, being Alex Bowman from Tucson. So Arizona's kind of growing, but I guess my number one thing to ask you is, growing up in Arizona, you drive pavement for the most part. There's Lake Havasu. There's Tucson. You lived in Scottsdale, so why the heck are you still living here in Arizona, and how hard is it to go out and find places to race growing up?
Yeah, it's definitely been tricky. I grew up racing go-karts since I was about 9 years old, which we have a great track, if you guys don't know, out at PKRA out by the water park out there off the I-17. So I grew up racing there is where I started, but once I got a little more hooked into racing and we started traveling around, I pretty much went to California 25 times a year to go race go-karts, just to get raced against more competition, traveled all around. So that was definitely a lot of work living in Arizona, going to California a lot to race. And then once I started racing NASCAR stuff, it was just about the same. I went to race 20 races in California in my late model program, which I ran 2017 and 2018. So that's a lot of driving, a lot of plane flights. But now with the K&N series, maybe a little bit easier, because no matter where you live, we're going to have to travel around, because we race from Tucson to Iowa to St. Louis to Sonoma. So it's definitely a pretty distant schedule.
So you come from a long line of very good racing heritage. Like I mentioned, a third-generation driver. A lot of racing fans can probably name them off. Your grandpa, Parnelli, is an Indianapolis 500 champion. Your dad, PJ, he won in basically anything that had wheels and an engine in it. They're kind of from California. Your grandpa started back east, and, of course, Indianapolis is back east as well, but kind of figured in that California area. How did they end up coming to Arizona for Scottsdale and you end up starting racing in go-karts?
Yeah, for sure. Like you said, my grandpa grew up back east and then moved to California, and that's where he had his shop, where he ran his IndyCar team, and then he eventually had his F1 team out of Torrance, California, in the same shop they still have today. So it's pretty cool that you don't see that a lot with the West Coast now. But when my dad was in his middle or so 20s, he moved to Arizona. That was when he was racing sports cars, and then when he transitioned to IndyCar. I don't even know exactly. I might have to ask him why he picked Arizona, why he moved here. But I love Arizona. I love the desert. The summers are a little rough, but that's usually a pretty big race season, so I'm not here a lot, so that makes it pretty great for the rest of the month.
There you go. That's not a bad plan. Most people just moved to Flagstaff for the summer and said you're going across most of the nation. That works too, I guess. But you're 16 years old and you're trying to chase this NASCAR dream. For those of you doing the math, that means you're going to your senior year at Notre Dame Prep. What is it like mixing the life of going to school with the life of racing across the nation trying to become a pro race car driver? It's not like just high school football where, hey, we have a game in Nevada this week, but the rest of the year we're based at our high school.
Yeah, so it can become pretty difficult at times, and I just really need the support from a lot of people, from my teachers to my school, and I've really gotten that at Notre Dame, which is pretty awesome. The deans and the principals and everyone have been very understanding of my schedule and understanding of me missing school, but because they know it's for a career that I'm chasing, a dream that I'm chasing, not just because I decide not to show up. So that's been pretty great with Notre Dame. That's one of the reasons why I think I've been able to stay there, and I'll be able to finish my high school there. So that's been great. And it's pretty tricky, though, sometimes missing school when you miss a week of school and then you have to come back and make up all the work. But I've been able to keep my grades up, been on the honor roll, so that's been pretty great. And I haven't had too much issues with any teachers or anything, or with the school. They've been very accepting, like I said. And it's funny, though, it's crazy, all my friends and stuff, they play football, other sports, golf, basketball, and then I don't think some of them understand exactly what I'm doing traveling around, really trying to make a career and make a life in NASCAR.
Because there's a number of athletes in Notre Dame Prep, whether it be football or basketball, who are going into the college ranks, Division I, Division II, to try to become professionals in their respective sports. What you're doing is just so different, though. Have you ever tried to go up to a football player and say, yeah, what I'm doing is kind of like what you're doing, and like, what's the typical reaction that you get from fellow high school athletes?
Yeah, for sure. I'm friends with a lot of football players that and a lot of athletes, because pretty much every other sport, it's from high school. You grow up playing that sport your whole life, which is pretty much like racing. Then you play for your high school and then go play in college, which that's a lot different with racing. There's no college or any of that. So it's a lot of people don't understand that it's more of a private, personal, more deal than just college. Because a lot of my friends, like Brock Lochnikar, Cade Bennett, a lot of them are going to pretty great schools to play football. And then racing is just so much different. Just the way you get picked up by teams, by sponsors, all of that is just so much different than really any of the sport I can think of, especially football or any other high school sports.
We talk a lot about Cade and Brock over here at Sports 360 AZ covering high school football. So it's cool to talk to a high school racer, if you will. It's a little bit different, but we're talking with Jagger Jones here on the inside lane, K&M Pro Series West rookie, and right now in the hunt for the championship. Third in points, 17 points behind your leader, Derek Krause, and then Haley Deegan is only 8 points behind Derek, but you're right there. You're in the mix fighting with these guys, but this is your first ever time in a big, heavy, lots of horsepower kind of stock car moving up from the late models. What's the biggest thing that you've learned so far in the first seven races of the year?
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely been a learning experience, but me and the team have been pretty proud of how we've been. We've been fighting for wins, been pretty proud of how we've been. We've been fighting for wins, been pretty decently fast at a lot of the races. But I think the biggest thing I've learned is just the whole racing. It gets really aggressive, especially a full body stock car compared to a late model. Necessarily a late model, it's hard to just run into someone and push someone out of the way, because you really chance wrecking your own car, wrecking a lot of other people's car, and it's more, I would say, less contact racing. But it seems the K&N series this year has been a full contact race since the drop of the green flag, so it's been a little learning experience in that way, to not let other people push me around, got to push them a little bit back, just try to finish all the races. I mean, I'm 17 points behind the championship, but I can say if three last lap crashes didn't happen, I think I would be pretty much in the lead of the championship. But you know what they say, like, of course it's easy to say that and sitting here talking on the phone than when it happened in the race. But so it's just been a little things like that. I think we can clean up for the rest of the season and really have even a shot for the championship.
And not a lot of people see racing as a physically and mentally tolling sport, but what has been more challenging to overcome moving into the stock cars? Is it more of a mental challenge, or more so of a larger mental challenging aspect, or more of a physically challenging aspect when you get to trying to manhandle those stock cars?
Physically, it's definitely something I take in mind. I mean, I work out a ton, make sure I'm real. It's really just the heat is what gets to you in those long races, and especially like the road course in Sonoma. You're sitting there on the red flag, the car's hot behind the engine, You don't have your air conditioning on, and it feels like you're sitting in a locked car, a turned off car in the middle of Arizona summer. So that gets pretty hard. But if you just train your body and make sure you're good, it's not like football where the stronger you are, the better your play. Racing is more if you're strong enough to withstand the heat and not let it affect you, then you'll be good. So it's mostly been the mental part, like you said, just trying to learn all the new tracks. For me, I haven't this year. We go to 13 different racetracks, and I've only been to two of them before. So that's been definitely a process of every weekend having to show up, learn a completely new track that I've never seen in my life. So that's been pretty mentally challenging, but I don't think it's anything that can stop us.
And like I mentioned, the championship race for the K&M Pro Series West will be in your backyard in Avondale, Arizona at ISM Raceway. And we mentioned kind of having a couple of those last lap or late race crashes that have kind of pushed you back to 17 points behind, but you're still there in that championship hunt. What for you needs to change? What adjustments do you need to make to be right there with Derek and Haley when you come to your house here at ISM Raceway in November?
Yeah, so Phoenix is going to be a whole different deal than what I've been used to. I've grown up the past couple of years racing short tracks, and Phoenix is about two and a half times bigger than any track that I've raced on to this date. So we go to Iowa in 2 weeks, which will be a little bit of a learning experience for the bigger tracks like Phoenix and Gateway. So I think once we go there, we'll have a better idea. Super cool to be racing at ISM Raceway. I mean, I've growing up being a huge racing NASCAR fan, and it being in my family, I've always, in living here in Phoenix, I've always gone out there for the cup races and watched, met some of my idols, heroes, like Jimmy Johnson and a bunch of other drivers. And to just be standing there as a 8-year-old watching the cup race, I just didn't think in 8 years I'd be racing myself at ISM Raceway. So that's going to be super cool, like a humbling experience for me. I'm super excited.
Still a long way to get to that championship race, though. We still got another half of the season to go. But have you put through your mind yet what it's going to be like being in a car at a racetrack like you just mentioned that you've been to so many times, met so many of those big shot drivers, like, of course, 7-time champion Jimmy Johnson? Have you thought about what that's going to be like in your head racing at home on this much larger track than what you normally race, and it could potentially be for a championship?
Yes, for sure. I think it's going to be super awesome. The only sort of laps I've ever done on that track is iRacing on my simulator I have at my house. So that's just a big learning tool that I can learn. But other than that, it just those tracks like that where you can't really go there and test or practice at all. You just got to make sure your car is all fast. We've learned everything that we can up to that point on the most similar tracks to Phoenix. Make sure I'm ready, the team's ready, and I think that'll be our best chance.
So before I let you go, we're going to do a segment I do with every driver. It's called Quick Time. I got some rapid-fire questions. I'm looking for some rapid-fire answers in return. You ready to set Quick Time?
I'm ready.
All right, man. What has been your biggest career highlight so far at almost 17 years of age, and why?
I think winning the Kern County Raceway Late Model Championship was pretty awesome. To win my first stock car championship, that was super cool.
What car have you not driven yet that you're going, that right there, even if it's just for one race, that's a dream car to race?
NASCAR Cup Series car.
Good answer. What is your favorite track to race at, regardless of what you're racing and why?
My favorite track is Kern County Raceway. I've won a lot of races there.
A little bit of experience.
Yeah, when you win at a racetrack, it's always fun to drive at, for sure.
And, of course, we mentioned there's a track in Lake Havasu, there's a track in Tucson, and so not a lot of success of Arizona payment drivers moving up through the ranks, but you're doing it right now. If there was a younger, I know you're pretty young, but there's a younger driver from Arizona who would ask you for advice how to get to where you are while racing from Arizona, what would you tell them?
I've raced at Lake Havasu, and it's a great track. I've won a couple races there. Tucson, I did the K&N race there. Also a great track with great super late model programs. I think that's great. Maybe if you can, go over to go over to California. Irwindale Speedway has a bunch of great racing options from legends to the late models. And if you're even younger, go-karts, that's where I started racing. I'm still out there almost every week coaching some kids. So I think one of those options is your best bet.
And lastly, before I let you go, I need some short track tips on iRacing. What do you got for me, man? I'm just like mid-split. I'm still trying to win those races. What can I do better on a short track?
You got to keep the car under you. If it's sliding, you're not going anywhere. If your front tires are sliding, you're just pushing up the racetrack, not going anywhere. If the rear tires are sliding and you're sideways, you're also not going as fast as if the car was under you. That's my best advice for iRacing.
Thank you. I need help, man. I need help. No. Jagger, thank you so much for being here on the Inside Lane. It's going to be so much fun to watch you progress and run through the rest of this year. Happy early 17th birthday, first of all. The K&N Pro Series West back in action next Saturday at Iowa. Be ready for that championship race here at ISM Raceway on November 9th. Jagger, again, thank you so much for your time. Hope to talk to you more in the future, and hope your grandfather is doing a little bit better, man.
Yeah, thank you. So thank you for the birthday wish, and I'm happy to be racing. Hopefully I'll see some of you guys out at Phoenix later this year, and follow me on Instagram at Jagger. Follow me on Twitter, Facebook, all the other social media.
Great
I'll
plug.
Post a lot on there.
Great plug. Not enough people do that on the show. Thank you for doing that, Jagger. This is the Inside Lane here on Sports 360 AZ. I'm Devin Henry. Be sure to check out all of our other motorsports stuff on the site, and we will see you guys as we get ready for the K&N Pro Series Championship race at ISM Raceway on November 9th.